On the one hand, the stories of Moses Grandy and John Maffitt share much in common.
The thing that these men share is a tremendous devotion and at times single-mindedness to the overarching craft of how to work well on the water.
And on the other hand,
their fates could hardly have differed more.
Bland Simpson, the author of Two Captains from Carolina, which weaves the stories of these two men together in one book. Together may be too strong a word. At no point in their lives did they ever meet or speak, their only commonality being a shared North Carolina heritage and a life on the water. And in the pre-Civil War period, no commonality would likely have been allowed, as Maffitt was a white man in the employ of the U.S. Navy, and Grandy, for much of his life, a slave in the employ of whoever had bought his services. Those contrasts are reflected in how these two men came to decisions about adopting a sailor's life. Bland Simpson reads from Two Captains from Carolina about the tail end of an adventure aboard the USS Constitution, which locked in Maffitt, the son of a well-known pastor, though raised by his uncle, a Cumberland County doctor, to a life on the sea.
Again, heavy weather bedeviled the Constitution. Is one great storm not enough, mused Maffitt? Must we be spared by a late winter nor'easter, only to be shipwrecked now by a springtime English gale? Commodore Elliott mustered every seagoing talent he could bring to bear in threading the needle between ocean rocks and the waves breaking upon the Scilly Islands, pushing through at 9 knots, mainmast twisting and groaning, and a general fear among those aboard ship that she would be dismasted in the night and they would all be lost. Yet they were not. Old Bruin kept up speed and brought them through and then cried out the general order, once all danger was past, splice the main brace. Everyone, including John Maffitt and his young comrades, gathered about the grog barrel, where it was rye for one and rye for all, and the huzzas rang out, and a jolly lot they were again. This is adventure. This is the life, Maffitt reckoned, the one true life for me.
That contrasts with how Moses Grandy viewed his life on the water, initially a chore given him by his masters, but which allowed the slave Grandy some hint of freedom. Bland Simpson reads from Two Captains from Carolina.
Wintertime, wartime, he cared not. In a life and in a world of captivity, he was at last master of something important, his own movements for many days at a time. Cold? What was that? Start early. Start while it was still dark and the hard winter cold had its rough grip upon all these broad, low tidelands, when the moon hung in the night clouds and the Black River seemed frozen to its edges. This was still a cold he could live with somehow. Raise those two heavy Bermuda sails and catch the bare breath of wind and move slowly away to the north in this cypress freight boat past the cypress sentinels lining the river's edge, some faintly lit by the setting moon, some silhouetted, and Grandy and his crew, guarded by the very trees, moved upriver like free men. The work may be hard, exposure to the elements may be severe at times, and was, with heat and insects at one time of year, and cold and ice, and you know, winter rain and so forth, and another time of year. Still, these men were operating on their own. These black men were operating these boats around the sounds and up the canals and so forth. It's also a very subversive sort of thing to be in a slave culture, to be able to act essentially for much of one's time as a free man. That feeds that fire.
That fire fed Grandy enough that he worked hard to purchase his freedom, and not just once but ultimately 3 times, his first two owners cheating him of his purchase and selling him before his final owner was true to his word. That fire also led Grandy, once ensconced in the Northeast, to purchase the freedom of family members and enter the abolitionist cause, a cause that could be seen as a change in his focus. Maffitt likewise saw change in his sailor's career. Prior to the Civil War's eruption, he resigned his naval commission and offered his services to the Confederacy, though perhaps without the fire that led Grandy to abolitionism.
The Lincoln people do not court him to stay in the Federal Navy, and then when he finds out they're going to arrest him, he just gives up, goes south, and he almost doesn't stick with Jeff Davis. He's appalled at what he hears Jeff Davis and Stephen Mallory say. They don't think there's going to be a war. They don't think the Navy is all that important. He sees very quickly that there's just not a strong guiding intelligence behind this Confederate leadership. So he almost leaves. If Robert Toombs had not come after him after Maffitt first met with Jeff Davis, Maffitt would have left. They would have gone to Europe somewhere, probably to England.
Despite his lack of faith in the Confederacy's leadership, Maffitt ultimately became perhaps its greatest naval hero, operating as a blockade runner. But the fire of the Confederacy never really burned in him. His one fire throughout his lifetime was stoked by that early adventure on the Constitution and the months and years on board ship that followed.
He said, even though he had a farm on the mainland there at Wrightsboro, near Wilmington, he said, a waterman, a man of the sea, is not fit for much else. So as far as evolution, I think he felt like that's what he was, and that's what he always had been. He was born at sea.
And what he remained even after the Civil War. He captained a British merchant vessel for 2 years, then returned to the U.S. and his Wilmington farm, where his maritime work continued. He married for a final time and wrote an autobiography. He died in 1886 and was buried in Wilmington. And there again the contrast with fellow sailor Moses Grandy, who could not return to his native Carolina, who traveled in 1843 to speak at an anti-slavery conference in England, then returned to Boston, where his last documented sighting was at a publisher's office, and then nothing. No evidence of his life or death past that event can be found. Bland Simpson reads from Two Captains.
No one would ever know when Moses Grandy lay down for the last time, or what his last words were before he was laid to rest, neither the when nor the where of it. In his life's work, he was first and foremost a sailor, a supplicant depending upon the motions and mercies of wind and water, which still and always abide. From a Pasquotank River ferry flat and the freight boats on the old Dismal Swamp Canal, to the lumber schooners in circuit around the Albemarle Sound, to the blue water ships that took him to the old wine-dark Mediterranean Sea, and then around the world, to the East Indies. He was a mariner, and he did what mariners do. Mark it down for all time. Read it as the epitaph for a great man born in Camden County, North Carolina, who lies somewhere in an unmarked grave, its whereabouts known only to the mind of God. Captain Moses Grandy, he sailed.
In lies both markedly similar and dissimilar, those final two words of an imaginary epitaph for Moses Grandy work as well for John Maffitt. Bland Simpson is the author of Two Captains from Carolina, Moses Grandy, John Newland Maffitt, and the Coming of the Civil War, published by the University of North Carolina Press. I'm George Olson.